This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
This episode is called Boobs.
It's not, though.
I mean, our episode, not the TV show. Welcome to the, Welcome to episode 436 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer. And we are in love with all things Outlander. This episode, we will be discussing episode 706, entitled Where the Waters Meet. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm amazing.
This is one of the first times, if not the first time this season, that there's no cold open. So I remember, I think every single time we've started an episode, I've been like, oh, there's like a cold open and some of them are longer than others, etc.
No, and I 100% skipped the intro. The
opening, yeah.
To move forward today. And I was like, I'm like, why is that horse riding? I was like, oh, is that the title card? And I was like, no, that's the episode. We're moving forward.
So we start right with the opening title, basically, which is, or the opening title was the end of, well, it typically is the end of the music or the opening song, and people rowing, which I'm guessing it's the
they're retreating. People fleeing. It's all of the
retreat. Yeah. Okay, so we're gonna wham bam thank you ma'am through this as much as we can. Willie returns to the army, so the show opens. William is writing, and at first I'm like, oh, William in the woods. Nope. For like a hot half second, Ginger.
On a beautiful horse, by the way.
Goodness lord. He is writing to meet up with his regiment in the British army, and he meets general once he's there he meets general Simon Fraser, and who says they are the army in general.
I did not recognize him this episode. It took me two episodes to realize. No, not William. Simon Fraser. Simon Fraser, because I was like, he looks a little bit like Robert the Bruce from Braveheart. Angus McFadden. Oh,
was that him?
It is him. But I watched a whole episode going, he looks a little off. Like, I think it's him, but maybe he just...
You just let me know.
You're welcome. Maybe he just resembles him, right? So
you waited.
I waited, and then the next episode, obviously, the next episode we speak about will be me discussing how I recognized it. But
okay, so don't spoil us. Stop.
I'm not spoiling. But I had no idea.
So at this point, it may or may not be
the first time I watched.
There's no confirmation.
It is, though, but it could be.
Except pause. So we meet General Simon Fraser, or Willie does, and we do, and we learn from General Simon Fraser that they, the British Army, or his regiment, whatever, is to meet up with General Howe's men from the north, and Willie puts two and two together that, oh, we're going to be cutting off the Northern Army. And by Northern Army, like, they wouldn't be cutting off themselves, so it must mean the Northern Continental Army. Back to Fort Ticonderoga, which after this will be, because I typed it out once, but after this it'll be just Fort
Ha ha ha, they left their cannon.
Oh yeah. So those fleeing Fort Ticonderoga were with them. So Jamie, Claire, people in the boats, etc. So they're helping people out of the rowboats. Mrs. Raven continues to be mentally disturbed. She's distrustful of Indians, and she sees Ian on the banks, and she's like, oh, he's going to hurt us or something. And I do have a bone to pick with Miss Rachel, though. Rachel's there in the boat with Mrs. Raven. And Rachel's like, oh, no, that's Ian. She says he's as gentle as a lamb and wouldn't hurt them. Now, the second part is true, most likely, right? But we have read books 1 through 7, Miss Rachel, most of which took place before you joined the crew. This ain't it.
I'm just saying,
like we know him.
Ian wouldn't have appreciated that description. He's like, I have a giant cock.
Oh, careful. What? No, Summer.
It's a manlyhood proof, right?
As they look for a place to camp for the night, they begin to run because they're afraid of Indians, Brits, etc. And they're surrounded, or so they think, by these, you know, screaming, yelling Indians. Claire goes with the people, and Jamie and Ian separate from them to try to distract whoever it is combination of Indians and Brits, who knows? And we see that Mrs. Raven has effed off, and Claire's like, damn it. So Claire goes after her.
At dark, like at dusk.
I know, right?
She's like, I'm going to wander out into the middle of nowhere and find this lady who clearly is on her own death watch. Also, I have a really hard time believing that she sat there until Claire arrived to shoot herself in the head.
I'm not a writer. I cannot speak to that.
Just saying. Somebody who wants to shoot themselves in the head is not waiting for someone to show up and try to stop them to do it. They don't want an audience.
I don't know. It's weird. Scotland, 1980. Roger is at Jem's school speaking with headmaster, one of our favorites, Mr. Mingus. And Mr. Mingus is like, you don't. So Roger came to say, what did you do to my child? That was not right. And Mr. Mingus is like, look, what the teacher did to the child, obviously holding him by the ear, whatever, that was not right. And I think he says, at least in the book, he says he's spoken to her. But the larger picture is, or just as important, is what Jem said. And while not everyone understood it, some of the kids did. And they translated it and or interpreted it. And so because Mr. Mingus can't let that go, it's not the fact necessarily that he spoke Gaelic. He said that was the teacher should not have done what she did. But he says it's what he said in the Gaelic, because some kids could understand it. That was why he got the switch or whatever. And so that's why Roger's there. Mr. Mingus explains himself, and Roger's
right. But his whole ass speech when he starts talking in the class is, do you want to learn how to curse? And they're like, sure. And he was like, there aren't real curses. We don't have bad words.
We're not there yet at all.
Are we sure?
Roger,
this episode is so slow.
Said, so Mr. Mingus is like, so you do have the Gaelic. And Roger's like, well, yeah, I picked up the Gaelic working on the fishing boats when I was younger, working in the Minch. And I just answered my own question a few minutes ago, but I wrote, I wonder if that's kind of okay, not a literal scene from Roger working in the Minch, because obviously you're not working in the Minch in those small rowboats that they were taking to flee to Fort Ticonderoga. No, that was not people in the Minch. However, I am more sensitive or aware, I guess, of, because I'm always trying to connect a title with something, right? Where does it make sense? How does it make sense? So you have people in the water in the very beginning. Well, you have people, you have the title card, people are rowing. Then you're reminded as people, Jamie and Claire et al., are helping people out of the rowboats as they just escaped across the river, Fort Ticonderoga. So that you have water there. You have Roger talking about how he picked up Gaelic. That was over the water. And there's a few more times in this episode, like, well, I'll bring it up once they happen again. But I I'm not saying any of this is correct. I'm saying I'm just looking for words or images that are related to water to try and see where these, like the title says, where the waters meet, where these may all meet. So Roger goes off about Gaelic and our people have spoken it for history, for decades, or sorry, millennia, hundreds of years, whatever. And we have a right to blah, blah, blah. And Mr. Mingus is like, he's not saying no to any of this. He's just like, all he sees is like, I've been wanting to do this. And you not only have the Gaelic, but you are also freaking passionate about it. Would you come and teach an intro class? And he's like, sure thing.
He also doesn't want to be the one on the hook for it.
Oh, Mingus?
For sure. Yeah. I don't want to be the one teaching Gaelic.
Well, that's you. I don't mind teaching.
No, thanks. But you do it.
Well, I don't speak Gaelic, but I could teach another language.
Not
yeah.
You, Roger.
Oh, well, fine. So then we're back with Jamie in the woods. We meet up with them again. He dispatches with the red coat, and then he and Ian return to their group, and they learn. Oh, sorry. And then we're with Claire. Claire's on her lonesome looking for Mrs. Raven. She finds her, who's sitting against a log. And like Summer said, like, it's not necessarily odd that she's gone off. It's not even odd that she has a gun with her, because that could be for, I'm scared, I'm getting away from this because I'm too scared to be with this group, because, you know, groups are easier to find than singles. And I have a gun for my protection. Like, that's legit and valid. And I think everyone could believe it. But that was weird. It's not weird that she killed herself. But I agree with you. I don't know that she went off planning to kill her. It was an option, right? If people got too close or whatever, she didn't want to be taken prisoner. But I don't believe she was waiting for an audience. Yeah, people don't typically wait for an audience to do that. So that was a little funky monk. But that's why I'm thinking she went off because of it was safer to not to be in a huge group numbers wise, attracting attention wise. And the gun was minimally for her protection from others, or whether it was to kill another person or just, or to kill herself before she was taken hostage. But yeah, she just like takes out all the possibilities.
It was just so a there weird we go. Choice.
And Claire is abducted, which is very much along. This is pretty much in line with the books. Slight differences, but and again, doesn't matter. It's getting us to where we need to be.
Getting us to the weirdest prison setup ever.
Okay, you made it. And this was my observation as well, was that when Claire went after Mrs. Raven, it appeared to be like dusk, right?
Dark, then
the next time we see not see Claire, but the next time we hear about someone looking for Claire, I wrote the next morning. And I was like, wait a second, because Ian is telling Jamie that what he's heard. I think he's telling Jamie, she went after Mrs. Raven and no one has seen or heard from her since. Now, he said she's been gone for a few hours. I could be a few hours, but if you're talking night to morning, because now we're definitely in more daylight. So it was either a very, very shady area, like not shady as in sus, shady as in like lots of trees. So I'm thinking it wasn't dusk, even though I thought it was dusk too, because a few hours does not equal
overnight time. It was real dark.
It was totally. But no one can find her. So he's afraid for that. Ian can tell, and this is redonk. So they're standing around the body of Mrs. Raven, and Ian looks down and is like, oh, they don't know for sure her, but probably was Claire. He's like, oh, someone's been taken, and I can, this is my words, not his. Someone's been taken, and I can tell from the lines or the scuff marks in the dirt and the moss and the everything on the ground that it was in this direction. And Jamie looks up and he's like, I don't know. He says north or whatever, but he's like,
I can tell from the cast list.
He looks up in the direction and he's like, oh, they've been taking her toward Fort Ticonderoga. I was like,
oh, look, they're dragging them in the opposite direction we've been walking from.
Exactly. So it must be there. Yeah. So like, that's some kind of magic. I mean, they're good trackers, but I mean, that's like less than 5 foot square of an area of no. Somewhere back with the Brits. I think it's Fort Ticonderoga with the Brits. So Claire is, this is what I started with. I am incorrect, but I'll correct myself later when I learned about it. Okay, so I didn't change my notes. Claire is with other POWs back at the fort that they had fled.
In like an animal enclosure. Like that is a thing that would keep a cow inside, but yes. Keeping humans?
Yeah. And she asks for water. And she kind of bullies Boss's guard around a little bit.
Or demand it?
I mean, she demands it. She asks for it, but the way she asks for it is, yeah, you're going to breathe this or people are going to die. And, da, 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 da. And then we see that one of her patients is Walter Woodcock. So she goes to him and is like, hey, what are you doing out here? And he says, well, the British needed the hospital, like that brick building or brick stone building, I think. They needed the hospital for their own wounded or for their own. And I was brought out here. And he's like a mensch. He seems like quite understanding that, oh yes, of course it makes sense that they would need their stuff. I mean, whatever. Maybe it's just his personality. I don't know. But he takes it like a champ, if you will. And he's like, yeah, but that's not the issue. I'm not sure he's in pain, like, because they don't have the drugs like we do now. But he's like, no, it's not really my leg lack of leg that is bugging me. It's the fact that I have this, I have trouble breathing. I have like a kind of a pain in my chest. And she listens and she's like, blah. And he's like, just tell me. And she's like, well, it could be this, could be that, and could be a pulmonary embolism, basically, which is not good news. And I don't know enough about the development of pulmonary emboli. I do know that they're not, that one of the highest, I want to say complications, although I guess you could call it a complication, one of the highest times of risk for the average person who doesn't have a normal risk, like an average risk to develop pulmonary embolism or PE. As I understand, any person who is not at high risk, so any person who's at normal average risk, their risk goes up. Even if all things being equal after or during surgery, especially after as they're recovering. So it doesn't surprise me that it would happen after his surgery, right? Because that is not atypical. what I am wondering, and this is the part I have no idea about, is I wonder if the movement of him, maybe the movement of him like jostled it. I don't know. Maybe he had something somewhere and the movement of him like jostled it and it went to his lungs and it took, I don't know. I'm just like that. I'm throwing out there like,
they barely moved him. Come on.
Well, I don't know how far away the hospital was from the barnyard. Come on.
From the manger that Jesus was born in.
So now we're still at Fort Ticonderoga. And this is why it took me a few back and forths to realize, oh, they just took her back to the fort, right? Is because in the book, that's not how it happens. Yes, she's stolen. Yes, she's abducted. And yes, she ends up seeing Willie. But, and I'm, again, not complaining. It makes sense for the book, for the show, because they cannot have 27 locations. They got to like consolidate this stuff, right? Not just for purposes of like building sets and cost, but for just like, especially since we know we're going to get through like book 7 in season 7A, and you know, it's not cut and dry because things overlap and go into other seasons. But most or all of book 7 in season 7, the latter half, and most or all of season 8 in book 8 in season 7B. So as we know, they're moving faster than they probably ever have moved, right? As a production, as storytelling. So you, number one, cannot have all these extraneous places you don't need, and taking her back, it doesn't not make sense. It works perfectly well. It is perfectly fine to substitute this place for that, whatever cabin or whatever they had, or stone building they had, someone's home, that they were using, as a, whatever it was, an outpost, in the middle of whatever, that the book had. Once I realized after a few back and forths, oh, so it's not like the book in that the location, they went back to Fort T. I'm not saying the whole thing again. Great. So now I'm just back and forth because everybody and their dog is at Fort T this entire episode, it seems like, except for the stint in the woods, right? So I just now go Fort T Willie, Fort T Claire. That's it. Fort T Willie now. Willie meets with Captain Richardson in person. And that's not what I meant. My notes said, Willie meets with this Captain Richardson person. That. Now, he tells him, I'm sorry because I lost my horse and all my stuff. I was not able to deliver these messages. They were lost.
Choices were made.
Yes. Well, not his choices. The horse's choices. Yours, though. The horse, of course. And he, I think it's Willie who says this. Richardson says this. He's like, you know, did you, like, he's asks him like, okay, you lost it. Like, did you by chance try and cipher the code and then translate everything or whatever and find out what it was saying and blah, blah, blah. Okay, you lost it. But were you able to like even make any contact with those people? And he's like, sorry, no, dude, I couldn't. I had no horse. I had no nothing. I had no anything. And he's like, okay, you just to let you know, like Cartwright, oh no, I think it is Willie who says this. He's like, I learned, like, my dude, Cartwright's a rebel. Do you know this? And so are Carver and that other dude you asked me to rendezvous with. And Richardson says, yup, they were spies for us. He tells Willie, quote, war is long. No doubt an opportunity for redemption will present itself, unquote. And this, my dear listener and viewer, is something we might should keep in the back of our brains, just maybe. And he tells him, go get back in your uniform. Claire and Fort T. Claire does her best by the POWs, her patients, and she confirms for herself that Woodcock is definitely embolic, and I totally made that word up. I think it's incorrect, but he has some kind of embolism. She goes to confront a British soldier to check up on the status of this food and the water and blah, blah, blah. And
while being contained by a 2-foot fence.
Right. No, this one she was out. This one she was out. And she realizes it's Willie, whom she hadn't recognized. Whoopsie doodles. Claire has an internal conniption. She's like, what do I do? What do I say? How do I do? I don't want to make anybody in trouble. Blah, blah, blah. And so she stops like demanding things at this moment. Willie is not happy when he finds out that she's a rebel. When he's kind of like, oh, wait, you are married to James and you are blah, blah, blah. And she's like, yes.
And he just hates being beholden to anybody. He doesn't want to ride the line.
Not untrue.
He doesn't want to ride the line of being in a space where he has to potentially
yes.
put his brain in their shoes.
And when he finds out that she's a rebel, he's not half pleased, or he's totally not pleased. But there you go. He agrees to send what supplies and food he can get for her and them. Lallybroch, 1890.
But how much like Jamie is he that he brought her liquor?
We're not there yet.
Okay, fine.
Lallybroch, 1980. Bree is telling Roger that what she felt and confronted while in that tunnel under the, what is it called? Dam? I almost said
under the
dune.
Dam. Yeah, it was the dam.
Oh my God. I almost said under the dune. I know it was a D word. I couldn't think of it. Under the dune. And Roger is like writing things down, and and as they chat, he realizes he's going to be late for his very first Gaelic lesson teaching opportunity. Fort T. Jamie and Ian looking for Claire. So Claire et al., we find out, are not POWs. Instead, they're traitors. Because they're British subjects, if they're captured by the Brits, or they're considered British subjects, the American colonists are. The British consider American colonists or Americans British subjects, right? Which, I mean,
but
I guess
they're doing that. They should be taking better care of them then.
Oh, well, girlfriend. But if they're... So anyone who is a rebel, not anyone who's living there, but anyone who's captured as a rebel or supporting the rebels is thus considered a traitor to the crown. And traitors are not typically treated as POWs. They're not afforded the same benefits. Ian tells Jamie it's safer because Jamie wants to like run in and like play Superman or play. No, he just wants to play Jamie Fraser. Go in and rescue Claire. And Ian says, like, look, uncle, keep your pants on. Settle down now, right? Keep your head about you. Yes, we both want to get onto Claire.
Answer the problem.
We need to be smart about this.
Ian, the voice of reason.
They look at me and are not threatened, or at least don't consider me threatening. I can pretty easily go in and out of either side. Because I am looked at as a Mohawk, and I am by Indians and Europeans, and I can move around much more easily, and they will not. I'm not a threat. Basically, I they consider me a scout.
Everyone thinks I'm inconsequential.
Pretty much, and
I can touch anyone
with much like talking down. Jamie's like, okay, fine. Claire at Fort T. Willie has come through with the supplies, like medical supplies, although he was not able to bring food. And this, as Summer said, is where he hands over a flask of whiskey.
He knows his stepmama. Even if he doesn't know his stepmama, he knows his stepmama. She likes a liquor.
Roger's Gaelic lesson. Roger is teaching and showing off, but in a very good way. Like, I mean, completely a little bit sarcastic, but also... This is the truth, right? Not showing off like neener, but showing off like he's showing off his skills. He's sharing. This is Roger's spotlight. This is what Roger was meant to be, whether it's music or Gaelic or something. This is one thing I think he's great at. He's a teacher. Absolutely. Well, a teacher and a preacher. So whether you're preaching or teaching, he's still engaging with the masses, right?
Fair.
Imparting some knowledge in some way. And they talk about Gaelic and its history and walking songs, and then he gives an example, a very short one, of the swan calls. And now this is me importing my opinion, but I don't think I'm wrong. If you look at this section of the book, because this legit is from the book, I mean, it exists outside the book too, this is an actual Gaelic text. In the book, Diana may or may not have used the entire text of this song or a version of this song. I do not know. However, I do know that what she had in the book, and thus what Davina chanted, she did not sing it. She chanted it. I was ready to poke myself in the ear. I fast forwarded through this ish because it is like, I don't even know, 87 stanzas.
Hey, they wrote it. Gilbreja did it. Gilbreja wrote it, I think.
Yeah. But, well, I don't think he wrote it. It's from the book. Unless what Diana has in the book was not authentic. I do not know. Meaning, I'm sure it's authentic Gaelic.
From what I'm saying,
I don't know if it's not historical.
Gilbreja was giving him props. we're doing a good job with it, whatever it is.
No, I think Roger did amazing. But this is why I'm saying there are many times when the book is better than the show, right? And there are many times when the show is better than the books.
That was used in the show. I can go back through his posts on
Facebook. No, I'm not saying Gilbreja didn't affect it. Or maybe even, I'm eating my mic.
I think he wrote it.
Like I said, I'm not saying he had no part. What I'm saying is, whether it's from the text from the book or not, they only did one, maybe two stanzas. And I was like, thank the gods, because I have to fast forward. I love Davina. I have to fast forward through this in the book. I cannot listen to it. And however, whether it's from the book or not, the text, the incident of him doing, you know, there is a swan song or swan call. What I do not know, I know it's in the book. What I don't know is if it's in the book in this scene. So they may have moved it around, which is, again, neither here nor there. Doesn't matter, but it totally fit, right? I mean, it fit the opportunity, it fit the occasion. So, and it's also nice to have things from the book, again, whether it's verbatim or not, I don't know. But Roger is, I love you, Davina, but Roger is better. And by Roger, I mean Richard. Claire gets a little bit of water for Woodcock and gets a little bit of water into Woodcock. Back with Roger in 1980. Rob Cameron, as the show, it is kind of a show. As the class lesson is over, people are coming up and, you know, saying, you know, thanks and congratulations and whatever. And taking their leave of Roger, the instructor. And one of those people is Rob Cameron. And he says, hey, I'm there. I brought my nephew, Bobby. And they mentioned Jem, but he's like, I brought my nephew, Bobby. And he gives Roger, he's like, hey, when you were passing out that stuff, there was this little like booklet included, or notebook. I don't think you meant it in there, but I don't think you meant it to be in there. But, you know, great job on starting looks like you have a great start on a sci-fi novel.
Did you understand it in the series to have been an accident since he was writing in it before he went? Because in the book, it was not.
No, in the book, it was.
It was not an accident in the book.
Yes, it was. This part was an accident.
No, he noticed in the book that the book was missing. In the book, he recalled that the book was missing. Not that he accidentally brought it. That's not what I understood.
Oh, I don't remember that. I remember things were missing, but I don't remember the book missing before a Gaelic lesson. I could be wrong. I don't remember that.
I could also be wrong. I'm sure we'll be schooled.
I'm sure. Oh, absolutely. And here's the thing. I could be right. You could be right. Or you both could be wrong.
I love that about this. Neither of us really have ponies in the race.
And then Roger, more so Rob Cameron. Rob's like, hey, so he basically kind of gently-ish weasels his way into an invite for dinner in the future.
That was weird.
It was, yes. And here's where and why, or mostly why, it doesn't matter whether it was an accident or not, right? Regardless of who was right between the two of us, it doesn't matter at this point going forward, because whether it was on accident or not, Rob has knowledge now.
He does. But I feel like prior to this interaction, Rob Cameron was in their house.
When?
In the books. Before this.
Yes, but when?
Circumstances? I don't know. He was
in
the
house. Did you call me bitch?
Yes, I did. My point is that he was in the house prior to this whole Gaelic meeting happening. And then he showed up and it was like, oh, and this was in your list of things. And he was like, oh, that was weird.
I don't remember
Meaning
that.
It was not in his list of things because he didn't bring it and it had been.
If
and
I'm
Rob
not
Cameron
mistaken,
had previously been in his house.
I don't think he was ever in his house in the book until.
I'm going to find out right now.
But yes, so they make plans to have him over for dinner in the future where Roger has agreed that Rob can pick up some sheet music of some of the Gaelic songs he had marked down or taken down.
I'm going to find it. I'm clearly just not going to find it today, but I believe very confidently
that he's there.
That he was in the house prior to the Gaelic lesson. Yeah,
okay.
For sure.
And I welcome it with open arms to be corrected. Claire at Fort T. I was going to read
correctly.
Did you
just say Claire at 14?
Fort T, as I have been saying the entire episode.
I heard 14.
Woodcock has died, but what I wrote was Woodbock. So I don't know what I was. I guess the finger slipped.
That's a Wicked reference, Bock.
I know. Yes. His wife is now officially a widow and can knock boots with whomever she wishes. Now, the reason I said that is not because it's important to anything right now.
No, but because it's in the book and it's a thing that should happen.
It's in the book. And so, yeah, it's totally me calling out the book or calling out something from the book, which I don't think really has been showcased or talked about at all.
Well, it's like, why even bring it up if you're not going to do it later? Which is how I feel about The Frenchman's Gold. And they did bring it up that one time, briefly in the beginning of the episode, wherein all of Jocasta's daughters were murdered.
A combination of or as you say sometimes, a mention of the French gold, right? Combination of a or very few mentions of the French gold. Followed up with, like, okay, you can look back and see that you really didn't do justice to something that has or will have a little bit bigger role than you had played it out to have or intended it
right.
to. Not intended for it to have, but recognized it as being important or not. And then when you get to season six, regardless of who and what the bugs were, what one thing that everyone, I haven't seen, well, that's not true, not everyone. The only people I have seen who are, you know, it's a very valid observation and they're welcome to their opinion because it's also valid. But the only people who have expressed an opinion, anything like they didn't necessarily see the bugs as having a huge lack of development, character development, are by people who haven't read the books and have only seen the show. Okay. And that's valid because I don't know. It's valid. Here's either way. It doesn't matter.
Everyone's experience is valid.
Yes. But also there are also show watchers who have not read the book who also said it was Funky Town. So that's what I'm saying. It's not consistent. And book readers consistently have said, regardless of if they like the bugs or not, that's a whole side issue. Book readers have consistently said that there was a huge lack of character development. Okay, we're not going to go back and ride that pony. That pony's been ridden. Rud? It's been ridden so hard. It's gone. It's done.
Somebody done rode that pony.
Apparently, I'm inventing my own past tense.
It's cool.
Verbs here. But yes, that pony's been rud. It's now floating somewhere out in the swamps of Virginia with Willie's horse. Somewhere out there. Yeah. So we're not going back to revisit that. I'm just saying, I'm only saying it because you brought it up. So yeah, it's almost like they said that and then they realized, or they said that or didn't say that, and then they realized that, oh my gosh, we actually have to like follow up with this. And bring that storyline kind of to a head, or you know, wrap it up a little bit. Combination, like I don't know. It is kind of too little, too late. But it was almost two things, right? Lack of development of the gold period, right? And then when you get to season six, and you're like, crap, we have to like wrap this up with these characters soon because half of this couple is going to be gone, and we got to like not drop the ball as much. Well, okay, fine. Even though the ball was dropped like for seasons. And you're going to revisit it now and try and, you know, wrap it up, tie it up in a bow as much as you can, right? Without having like completely ignored it. It could be a choice of editing. It could be the writing, which I'm kind of arguing. I believe it's the writing, but it could be the editing, or maybe it's a combination. The episodes that we did get, all of season six and the beginning of season seven. I guess it's mostly all of season six because the beginning of season seven was like, it was pretty quick, right? It's pretty quick into it. But the combination, whatever episodes they had, whichever episodes they had that were content from a season, gosh darn it, not even season six. Because they made the bugs in the show, they made the bugs be with the fisher folk, right?
That's what your recollection was.
No. I'm not talking about who's Mrs. Bug and who was mean. I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying
I don't believe that the bugs were in line with the fisher
because,
folk.
Because okay, but they did not arrive till season six. In the book, they arrived in book five.
The bugs arrived prior to season six. 100%.
Okay. I don't remember that. Because I remember that they showed up when there was like a big like dancing scene and we were trying to find them.
No, they were there at the wedding, which happened in like season, like Roger and Bria's wedding, Brianna. They were there in five, which means they were probably there at the beginning of the end of four.
I don't remember that. It doesn't mean I'm right, but okay. So yes, back on and now we're forward to where we are. Ian sees Claire and tells her about the plans with Jamie. Like, look, you got to just, you know, stay here. I'm here to get you out. And as they're talking, they're interrupted by a Willie. Willie calls him out as being the nephew of James Fazer.
Shame on you. What? We're not going to interrupt a conversation with a Willie.
I mean, I didn't do it.
You know what you did.
Diana did.
You embraced it and influenced it.
Girl, it has been so long since I've been in anything with a Willy.
Stop saying Willy. True. You're making it worse.
Hurts my feelings.
So Willy calls Ian out as being the nephew of James Fraser. And then Claire steps in and says, yes, that is true. And I'm his aunt. And William says, you're not a scout. And he kind of actually is. But yeah, right now he's just playing one in this moment. And Willy will not let Claire go with Ian. Meanwhile, as they argue, in come the flaming arrows of one James Fraser. And he uses this distraction, Ian does, to steal his auntie away. And he says, you owe me a life, and we will be square after this.
Fair.
Jamie and Claire reunite in the woods, and they're like, we got to go get the show on the road. And then she has the pleasure of telling him that she's met his son. And he's like, tell me about him, but like they have to go. So they rendezvous, they get back up and run away, and they meet with the Continental Army, the army proper. They go back with the refugees where they had met the Continental Army, and the plan was, or at least the VO says, they'd be leaving soon for Scotland, since Jamie's time or conscription time was soon up. Yeah, right. We are in episode 706, dear listener/viewer. Yeah, you. If you believe this for a hot second, you are gullible. They aren't doing anything that big until some kind of cliffhanger episode, which is not going to be as earliest as 708, right? So absolutely, that's a lie. Ian runs into Rachel, and she thinks he's come to come back to take Rollo and chat about it. And they do. He is, but he's mostly there to see her. And they flirt over Rollo, literally, as they're both petting him as they're chit-chatting. And as I say, you can't ever believe anything like, we're going to Scotland soon. B to the S. Jamie's recruited again into service, this time ostensibly to be part of a safer group, the Rifleman of Daniel Morgan.
In his weird ass outfit.
I mean, that was like a Daniel Boone outfit.
I don't understand why that was a better outfit. Because if you're a sniper, shouldn't you be invisible in a forest? Why are you in a bright white fringy jacket?
It was animal skins.
It doesn't matter. It was a bright white outfit, which means everyone can see it was white in a green forest. It was visible. It was a visible choice for sure.
Claire recognizes later that evening when Jamie and Claire are in their tent together and they can whisper sweet nothings with privacy.
Are they though?
They kind of are. Claire recognizes the name when Jamie tells him, look, Claire, I know like your voiceover or my, I think it was Claire's. I know the voiceover just said as we approach the camp that we're going to Scotland soon, but it lied. I signed back up. I'm now with Daniel Morgan. It's a lot safer because riflemen are, you know, by definition, shoot from further away because they have the eye for it. Scotland will have to wait a little bit longer. Jamie and Claire chat about, it's like more philosophical now. It's like women versus men fighting and women versus men dying. And all pretty much from here to the end of the episode is like all this book. They're just chatting in bed for like five. That's like the longest scene in the entire
It was choices made for sure.
It was beautiful. And it's a lot of book. I'm not saying it's 100% verbatim, but a lot of it was. It's book loveliness. If you're a reader, you're just like, And this is probably one of the longest scenes of the episode. And it ends with her telling him about his son.
Mm-hmm.
And then our final scene is Lally Rock, 1980. Roger is in the kitchen. He's rocking out to some 80s music, but 70s or 80s music. And he sees the dude.
He was not rocking out. We're not allowed to call that rocking out.
Whatever. He was white man rocking. And
he was. Okay.
White man jiggering? I don't know. What do you like?
He wasn't. That was not a rocking. That was him. That was a man putting groceries away
to a
little bit of pep in his step. That was it. It was not.
It was a white man with a little bit of pep in his step. Let's be honest.
Okay. That's fair.
Anything that falls under the category of movement and music together, I just call rocking out for the purposes of this. And he's like, oh, as he's like turning around, he sees a dude through the window.
For sure.
And he kind of freezes. He kind of freezes and he's like, okay, like I saw that. I don't want him to know that I saw him because I want to have someone of the element of surprise. So he like continues to like slowly move around and put things down and he grabs something. I don't know what he gets. I don't know what it is, but whatever. I forget it. And he walks outside and then rushes in to confront this guy. And the guy, as soon as he like sees him running out of the kitchen, he like starts to run. And he gets him and he grabs him and he turns him around and it is the necklace. Or maybe that's a spoiler. Whatever.
Is it though?
It's
both. Why would anyone watching this show know that?
They wouldn't. Sorry. No spoiler.
They wouldn't. And why would that be, Ginger?
Because it's Buck.
But why would it be confusing when a rando person showed up and Roger punched him in the face?
I don't know what you're getting at.
What I'm getting at is that they chose 2 or 3 seasons ago.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Gimmicky. Why cast Graham McDonald?
You're not talking about Nucklevy. You're saying why would anyone know it's Buck?
No one should know anything. But the whole point is that in the book, you should know it's Buck because it is Buck. From the second you see him, it's Buck. But the fact that they, what feels
changed
like to
up on us,
very yes. gimmicky.
I agree.
Cast Graham McTavish.
One of those McGrams. Yes.
Yes. Graham McTavish as Buck Lee in the season that they hung. Poor Roger.
Hanged. Yes.
He was hung.
No, you hang, or past tense, you hang. I hang a picture. I have hung a picture. I'm going to hang a man by the neck till he's dead. I have hanged a man. The man was hanged.
He was hanged.
There you go.
He was hanged. That's what I said the whole time.
You said hung.
Didn't I? I swear I said hanged. Okay, well, I'm wrong.
I wouldn't have corrected you if you had said hung. Shit. Hanged.
You could have. Anyway.
No.
The whole point is that they put a face on the gentleman that tried to kill Roger. Mm. And they made us all aware of it. And then 2 seasons later, thank you. And then 2 to 3 seasons later, they bring him back with a different actor and expect us to be like, why is this rando?
Okay, 2 reasons.
In their yard.
2 reasons, or 2 things, I should say. Number one, I don't know, and I don't know if any, I don't know. I'm not part of the showrunner group, right? I'm not part of production. My first guess, besides it being gimmicky, because like it's for a quick like a quick not a laugh, but like a quick like oh my god, you know that's it, you know, a quick like kudos,
yeah, I
guess
you.
Right, uh-huh. a quick praise, moment of praise or giddiness for people to recognize someone
for sure.
Okay, so the quick, it's like it's the entertainment equivalent of a quick laugh, although this wasn't for giggles, a quick show, a quick whatever. It makes sense. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I can. Okay, that's the only reason I can think of it. Number one. But the reason I think you do that is because you don't have confidence that you're going to be around that long.
I wasn't even going to go that far. My whole point is that they made a choice. They made a choice during season, I'm assuming 5, because that was the fiery cross season. They made a choice in season 5 to bring Brett Graham. Bring Brack. God damn.
Just do what I do and say McGraham, because that's what I call him on
accident. Bring Graham back to play this character.
Yep.
Knowing that this character comes back.
Comes back in the books, but that's why I just ate my mic. I don't believe they were convinced they were going to have the show around at that point.
Well, then I believe they are short-sighted and did not look at any of their ratings.
How does that surprise you? They didn't do justice for the freaking gold, and that's a lot more important.
I don't even care about that either. My point is they made a character choice with a character that they could not sustain.
They kept Murtaugh alive, Summer.
Don't talk to me about that. That didn't exist.
Nothing
I've let
should
it go.
Surprise you. Character, what do you call it? Character or storyline. Nothing should surprise you once they kept Murtaugh alive.
You know
for an
what
entire
really surprises
season.
Me?
What?
How amazing this season is.
Shut the monkey.
I love this season. And
me
I'm
too.
So pissed.
It's so past.
I'm so pissed we couldn't talk about this at Comic-Con.
Oh my. I'm not upset. I am upset for you guys too, because it's a bummer and a freaking half.
No.
It was
and for sure it would have been such an amazing conversation between myself, Heather, and all of the other people, some of whom have seen it, some of whom have not.
Maybe you're not upset then that it's the only one of our panels that's never been recorded.
It's for the best. Nobody wanted to see that.
So, So, yeah.
So that was chapter. Sorry, it wasn't a chapter. It was episode 3.
I mean, it was something.
And that was episode 706. Join us next time when we will be discussing episode 7. So 707. A practical guide for time travelers. And if you'd wish to join us to continue the conversation post these episodic discussions, you can join us at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you've ever had a hankering for some Outlander Pod branded merch, please visit our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
If you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, the Outlander Pod Gazette, please do find us at outlanderpod.com/newsletter. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20. Outlander20 for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.